Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
And welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today on this fine Wednesday in Lent, where the bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle right now, and the hills the greenest green. Guess where they are? Yes, Seattle. And we're here with Rod Bennett, who is not in Seattle, but still, you know, he's been to Seattle.
Yeah,
and I took Rod Bennett years ago. He came to Seattle, and we went and saw, I think, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
If actually, the Chamber of Secrets.
It was the Chamber of Secrets. Oh, okay.
A little earlier than you are remembering.
Okay, and we went to the fabulous Cinerama Theater. The Cinerama is a local landmark that was built during the heyday of CinemaScope films like Ben-Hur.
Yeah,
which, by the way, is being remade, I was stunned to discover.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, so we'll see how that turns out. And anyway, so we went there, and what I remember mainly about it was they showed a trailer for The Lord of the Rings, which had not come out yet.
Ah, that's right.
So it must have been 2001 that we went there.
And also the Finding Nemo also trailer.
Oh, was that there too?
Yeah.
A memory like an elephant. It's amazing. But the Cinerama is one of these things, you know, for which local Seattleites are very grateful to Paul Allen, the boy who never grew up. He's a Microsoft millionaire. He helped to found Microsoft and then retired when he was 39 or something to play his electric guitar and go do awesome things like refurbish the Cinerama, which they were going to tear down, and build the world's only science fiction museum, which is also in Seattle, which is super cool. And the
Experience Music thing is his too, isn't it?
Yes, the extraordinarily ugly piece of architecture that is the Experience Music Project. If you're out there in Radio Land, just go Google Experience Music Project and get a load of that building. It is just the ugliest thing ever built, but it's supposed to look from the air like a smashed car. So thank you, Pete Townsend, for inspiring the single ugly, I mean, on purpose ugly. There are ugly buildings that are just ugly because they're functional.
Right.
You know, so the mechanical engineering building at the University of Washington campus, for example, or any given warehouse, is not a thing of beauty to behold. But nobody was really expecting them to be things of beauty to behold. But this is like serious architecture that is just on purpose super ugly. And
it's kind of a mess, definitely.
It really is. It's just an amazing place. But still in all, the Science Fiction Museum is cool. And, you know, and Paul Allen is just, you know, he's built. We go up to the San Juan Islands every Memorial Day weekend. We go up there and go camping with a bunch of friends. And on Lopez Island, where we go camping, Paul Allen also bought this giant swath of property down on the southeast side of the island. And he built this thing that is just, it's a Bond supervillain lair. That's what it is. I mean, you can go down like to the end of the road and you get sight of it. You know, the whole side of the build, it's this huge building. It's like his cottage / supervillain lair where, you know, I'm sure world leaders come there to dicker with him about whether or not he's going to turn the death ray on the Eiffel Tower, you know.
Yeah.
And stuff. But it's got, you know, it has this big glass side, and he actually owns two submarines as well as the big yacht, which he just used to destroy a reef, actually, accidentally. He scraped his anchor or something along this reef in the South Pacific somewhere and destroyed it. So not happy about that. But anyway, the supervillain lair is pretty cool looking. There's a local online webzine, kind of a Seattle version of The Onion, called The Naked Loon. And a while back, the Naked Loon had two supposed editorials, one from Bill Gates and one from Paul Allen. And the Bill Gates one was, you know, it was this sort of sober, reflective piece called, you know, "With Great Wealth Comes Great Responsibility," and it was all about his, you know, his responsibilities in society and so forth. And then the Paul Allen one, the title of it was "Woohoo, I'm Rich." So local hero. But anyway, how are things going, Rod?
I'm good. Things are very good here. The sky is nice and blue over East Tennessee today also.
It's good.
My wife and I just had to make an emergency run out to buy a new dishwasher. But other than that, everything is fine.
Well, that's a start.
Everything's cool. Good. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was. We started a conversation yesterday. Well, I should. First things first. Speaking of supervillains, permit me to engage in a brief supervillain monologue. It's not really a supervillain monologue. It's just a regular monologue. But, I'm watching, you know, as we're living through the astonishing spectacle of this election year, and watching as the front runner, who has openly encouraged his supporters to beat people up, who, you know, come to peacefully protest. They've done this to peaceful protesters repeatedly at his rallies. He's urged his followers to beat them up and then promised that he would pay their legal bills if they would do this. He has openly encouraged violence. He has, today, he's threatened violence against the Republican convention if he doesn't get his way. Now, people who pledge to use violence in order to achieve political ends, the technical term for that is terrorist. And I am watching this spectacle unfold, and there's a movement that has now arisen within conservative ranks called the Never Trump Movement. And they have my full backing, because I think that this man is a dangerous fascist and demagogue. And I think that the idea of somebody as unstable and narcissistic as this guy with his finger on the button of nuclear launch codes is too terrifying to contemplate. So I am all in favor of the Never Trump Movement. But one of the things that is important to understand is that in Catholic teaching says that you can act to try to lessen evil. What our common political discourse almost always translates that into is you can support the lesser of two evils. And there's actually no support for that idea in Catholic teaching. Lessening evil, great. If you're trying to lessen evil, knock yourself out. That's an act of virtue. But if you use your opposition to one evil as an excuse for actively supporting other evils, not good. Acting to lessen evil is an act of virtue. Acting to support lesser evils is supporting evil.
Right.
And so one of the things that you are permitted to do by Catholic teaching, I'm not making this up. This is Cardinal Ratzinger, later Pope Benedict XVI, says that it is legitimate, if you have a proportional reason for doing so, to support the candidate who is likely to do less damage, because what you're trying to do is you're supporting, you're trying to lessen evil. As long as you don't support that candidate because you support the evil policies that he does like.
Right. If you'll allow me to try to finesse this just a moment. I think it's important to see that at this late stage in the game, we're not being asked to support anybody. What we're doing is we're being given, at the very last stage of this process, we're being given a choice between two options.
Right.
In other words, the time to actually support a candidate is way back at the beginning of the process when they're trying to decide which men are going to run. Or I say man, that's an old-fashioned term. Which candidates are going to run.
Yeah.
And so when you get to the actual general election, you're not really being asked to support anybody. You're being asked to register which of these two do you prefer.
Right.
And you only get to choose from between these two.
Right.
Well, so by necessity.
You can vote for third parties, though.
You can spend the day fishing, as the old phrase goes, which in itself is an honorable choice with a long history in our country. But even that's a choice. Even that's a decision you're making. But at this late stage, you're simply being asked of the two major candidates in our system.
Right.
You may choose to use your vote in an attempt to support somebody else.
Yeah, you can register. I'm going to register a protest vote.
I understand.
I'm going to vote for a guy named... you'll have to find out after the break. But you're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Rod Bennett, and we will be back right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Hello and welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we're here today with Rod Bennett. Just talking a little bit about, we were talking before the break about the distinction between voting to lessen evil or acting to lessen evil, because, of course, it applies not just in voting, but it applies in all moral cases. And voting in order to actively support some quote-unquote lesser evil. If you're supporting Donald Trump because, you know, I oppose abortion, although, of course, Trump doesn't really oppose abortion. He doesn't care about it at all. But in addition to that, you sort of go on and say, but I also really like what he has to say in terms of racist demagoguery and his hatred of women. you've kind of missed the point, you know?
Yeah. I think probably for somebody to actively support, if active support means being a, you know, somebody can either hang of that, you'd have, I think, have some serious reservations about most of these major candidates that we've seen lately. But
that's why I can't support any of them, you know.
But when you get to the stage where the two parties are have presented you with a nominee, you're being asked essentially, would you like to have input in this?
Yeah.
And if you would, you're perfectly willing to, you're perfectly encouraged and will do so. Do you think that it's wild to come out and vote for the one to prevent the other getting in? Will Rogers was very wise. He said, in America, we don't vote for, we vote against.
Exactly right. And certainly voting. I think it's a foregone conclusion that Hillary's going to be nominated.
You mentioned how interesting this election cycle was getting. I told my wife earlier, I said, or maybe it was my son, I told him the only way that this current election cycle could get any more entertaining than it already is, is for the feds to go ahead and indict Hillary.
Which that would make happen. Things extra super weird, you know.
Which could happen. And
very possible. Although I think if this administration has anything to say about it, they will pull out the stops to keep
it. Well, it's a difficult problem. I think the reason they haven't done it is because they're trying to avoid an effect the election. But my goodness, aren't you saying that we'll go ahead and do it after she's president?
Well, see, that's the genius of it. Once she's nominated, she can grant herself once she's elected and inaugurated, she can just grant herself a pardon. Isn't that brilliant? We'll see where that goes. But my point basically is simply that you're never under an obligation to support evil. In fact, you're under an obligation to not support evil. But what you can do is you can try to lessen evil.
That's right. Even if it involves some participation in a very imperfect choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Remote material cooperation. Right. Well, the evil is something actually that the church says is permissible. Because, you know, we're all in one way or another, we have to remotely cooperate with evil in various ways. It's just how the universe works. So we're stuck in a world where, you know, you're going to have to buy your dinner somewhere, and it could be possible that your peas on your plate were not derived from some ethical source, you know. Right. And so because of whatever, the pea pickers are not justly paid. And that's just how life goes. I mean, you try to do your best, but you're bound to, at some point or another, to be remotely cooperating with evil, and so that happens. But you know, when you're confronted directly with a choice between two candidates who both advocate grave intrinsic evils. And one, you know, the GOP has managed with Donald Trump to pick the one guy who is even more morally repellent. I mean, he's like, you know, one of the things you hear is I'm going to vote for a third party guy. You can't do that. Why not? Because you have to vote for the candidate who at least has a chance of being elected. Now, the guy that I will support is somebody you've never heard of. He's a guy named Joe Schreiner, but he's a Catholic.
I've heard of him.
Probably because of me. But he's a Catholic who holds to the whole teaching of the church.
Uh-huh.
And that's really, I mean, I set the bar really low to try not to murder people, right? That's a perfectionism, you know.
Right.
And
let me tell you the reason why I wouldn't vote for Joe.
Okay.
The time to get involved in Joe's candidacy was months and months ago.
Okay.
In other words, to use my vote, I'm not saying it's wrong to use a vote for him as a symbolic gesture.
Right.
I don't think that.
Okay.
And I don't think you have an obligation to vote at all. I think you have an obligation. I think a Catholic has an obligation to be involved and vote.
Use the vote.
But not necessarily every single time the polls are open. In other words, I do think that the day's fishing option is a valid one.
I would buy that.
But I believe that the way the system is arranged is that these two parties exchange the chief magistracy of the nation back and forth between them. It's been that way since nearly the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that I'm offered to have some input into that process. Okay, I can, again, decline.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I would try to actively influence a whole separate race from the one that Joe's in, and that is the one as to which two of these two persons that actually one of them is going to rule
Right.
Which of these two do I prefer? Or yeah. Which one would I like to fling up against the other one? If you see what I'm saying. Sure. In other words, not voting for, but sure. voting against, you know.
Right.
I'm not going to cast a vote for this year, but I might very well cast a vote against.
And that is a legitimate thing to do because it's trying to lessen evil.
There's also something to be said that a lot of people are not thinking about. They think, well, if you were to vote for Hillary Clinton, let's say this. If you won't vote for Donald Trump,
right.
have you guaranteed Hillary Clinton?
Right. Which you have. I mean,
I think that ship has sailed by now. This Republican Party is in such disarray, they can't possibly expect to win the presidency under this condition.
I don't think so either. Especially if it's Trump. Thank God, really.
Even if I was a convinced Republican, which I'm not.
Yeah.
But even if I was, it's just the Democrats winning unless some spectacular thing happens, like Hillary jailed, you know.
Yeah.
That ship has already sailed. You know, I don't think the Republicans themselves. The question right now is, everybody said, well, okay, why would you accept 4 years of Hillary? I'm not really accepting it. I'm just saying.
Accept is such a strong word. I mean,
yes. What I'm saying is that there's something bigger at stake than this right now. And if I was a convinced Republican and a diehard conservative, I would feel this way too, I think. And that is that you put Hillary Clinton in the White House, you've got Hillary and Bill for 4 years.
Right.
You put Donald Trump in the White House right now, you turn the Republican Party over to Donald Trump.
Right.
Which it remakes itself in his image going forward from here.
Yeah. Yeah.
In other words, keeping the Republican Party in the future is more important than a useless attempt to win this current cycle, which I think is futile at this point.
Yeah. Well, and I often have people tell me, because I've said this in the past, I didn't vote for either major party candidate in 2012 either. And I was told you must vote for the person who has, you know, the chance of defeating Obama. You must do this. And why? Well, because Obama is, you know, the greater of the two evils and et cetera, et cetera. And so the whole argument was predicated on this notion of, you know, you have to support, you have to not try to lessen evil, you have to support the greater or the lesser of two evils.
If support here means you have to show it.
Well, yeah, that was it, though. I was supposed to pretend that, you know, that Romney was also not going to do serious evil.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. If that's your argument, great. But in this election year, if the GOP nominates Trump, which it gives every indication that it's going to do.
Kicking and screaming. Their credit against the will of the majority of them, by the way.
But if they do that, that whole you have to support the lesser of two evils argument vanishes on behalf of the GOP, because what you're now going to have is you're going to have a candidate who is incredibly even worse than Hillary.
I thought the most illuminating thing I've heard.
Oh, well, we're up against the ring, but we'll be back after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. We're here today with Rod Bennett, and we will be back right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We are here today with Rod Bennett. We've been chewing over the morality of voting. And by the way, I should add that I agree with you, Rod. that voting, I think my favorite analysis of the role of voting in ordering our common life, which is what voting and politics is all about, and something that's absolutely required of us, by the way, by our faith, is to work together to order our common life. A friend of mine once said that voting is the stone in the stone soup of civic involvement. It's the least important thing that you can do in terms of ordering the common good. It's important, but not all that important, especially in a national election where, you know, my vote is one of millions of other votes. And I'm voting in a state that is historically, you know, ultra violet blue state. I mean, not for nothing in the late 30s did they speak of the 47 states in the Soviet of Washington. So, you know, my vote as, you know, a conservative matters not very much in the grand scheme of things in a national election. A local election, I can really...
Well, that's it. Most of us come into the process really, really late. If you want to be involved in politics and have what you say matter a lot, get involved in county politics. Join your county Republican or Democratic Party and work there. That's where the real stuff happens. That's where you can support somebody.
Yeah.
Again, at this point, you're being asked to choose between two, but it's because you've come in right at the end.
Yep. So, you know, when we talk about this stuff, I mean, that was basically my point that I wanted to make, was that you can vote to lessen evil, you can act to lessen evil, but what you can't do is support lesser evils deliberately. You can accidentally, in your attempt to lessen evil, you can, as a side...
Well, by definition, if you're given two, you're choosing... If by definition, if you're given two very imperfect candidates,
right,
and you're simply voting for one in order to hinder the other,
right,
which is what most of us do,
mm-hmm,
then by nature, you're casting a vote for a very imperfect candidate.
Right,
and you're trying to be pretty morally imperfect.
Right, you're trying to lessen evil, and that's the goal. Mm-hmm. Just don't support lesser evils.
Well, that's when support turns into shilling for somebody, and that's one of the main problems in our politics right now. Is both sides, Republicans and Democrats, shill for their own party, and they shouldn't.
Right.
In other words, when Republicans talk about the horrors of big government, the dangers of eroded civil liberties from ever and ever increasing levels of government regulation and supervision, we shouldn't perceive that as an attack on the Democratic Party or on our Democratic candidates.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you can listen to what they say and be warned about it without immediately saying, but that's right. What we do.
Yeah.
Same thing vice versa. When the Democrats talk about the horrors of big business and unregulated capitalism and all these other things, all those things are still horrors, and they're really true.
Right.
And we need to, if you're a conservative, you need to stop shilling for your party. You need to stop pretending that those horrors don't exist, or that if I say something against it, it will be giving aid and comfort to the enemy. That's what is one of the major problems in the country right now, is the willingness of both sides to apologize and gloss over and whitewash the defects in their own system for fear of encouraging the opposite side.
Well, and this is why
shilling is.
This is why I keep insisting that when we approach all of these matters, what we have to do is think first with the church, not think first of how will this make my party look bad?
Right.
How will this make their party look bad? You know, and because I run into this all the time. I was talking to Dale Alquist yesterday, the president of the American Chesterton Society, and he said he was having a conversation with somebody who said, "I just don't know about this Pope. I mean, how can he be so critical of capitalism?" And And Dale said, well, you
know. Wrong guy to say that to.
Yeah, Dale said, the popes have always been critical of capitalism. All the popes. Every pope that's ever spoken to the question of capitalism.
Since
all the
way back to came into being. Yeah.
All the way back to Leo XIII's, you know, social encyclical. They've all questioned and been critical of capitalism. And the guy was just stunned because he had made the elementary classic American mistake of assuming that whatever is popular with American conservatism is also the teaching of the church. Right. And you know, Dale had to disabuse him of that notion. And so you'll find the same thing, of course, in Chesterton. You know, when Chesterton looks at these kinds of questions, he's also critical. He's not just across the board nothing but critical of capitalism. He recognizes, as the popes do, that there are good aspects to it. But the idea that capitalism is somehow part of sacred tradition is exactly what the New Testament is warning about when it says, don't fall prey to the traditions of men. Confuse the capitalism is a classic tradition of man.
What's interesting to me right now, though, is that the degree to which Trump is a really terrible conservative.
Oh, yeah, I know. But
in other words, he's not conservative even by the definition of somebody like Ted Cruz, who's has a very narrow, strange idea of conservatism.
Indeed.
But the strange thing is he's not even slightly conservative in most areas. And yet the media, the public mind is convinced that he's the ultimate example of what the Republicans are really like, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and that tells you how much conservatism has decayed. I mean,
does
he offer? He offers racism, misogyny, and the promise. I mean, the pledge and promise of war crimes. That's when I'm president, I'm going to commit war crimes and I'm going to make the military do it. And that's what people are nuts for. And that should be what, quote unquote, conservatism stands for now.
To me, the most illuminating comment I've read in this whole Trump cycle is when Ann Coulter said that when she heard about Trump's immigration policy, how he was going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it and all that. Right. She went on TV and said she was so thrilled and excited about what he said. She said he could perform abortions in the Oval Office and I would be okay with it.
Right. Which, and
do you remember this comment?
Oh, I absolutely remember it. And that, you know, that's what I'm talking about when I'm, you know, in the past, I mean, one of the things that she periodically mouths off about is, you know, being pro-life and so forth, because this is the kind of rhetoric that you have if you're going to get anywhere in the GOP. But, you know, when she says stuff like that, it shows you that, you know.
That's something a real Christian conservative couldn't say even in jail.
Of course not. Of course not.
And that's what's so interesting is she has revealed, and I have still have good friends who are evangelical Christians who are heavily involved in the Republican Party and consider themselves very conservative. And they're appalled by this stuff.
Right, of course.
And yet everybody's treating Mr. Trump as if he is the ultimate example of what these people are really like.
Yeah.
And well, in reality, that's not it. Those people have made common cause with people that are like that.
Right.
They've been willing to caucus with those people, which is there's some guilt involved in that.
Sure. Well, and he is hugely popular with evangelicals. He's becoming more and more popular with evangelicals.
Very, very, very strange.
Very concerning.
And very concerning for evangelicals right now, too.
Well, I mean, you know,
it has split them right down the middle, so much that they're talking about their movement being permanently damaged by Trump.
So it will be. I mean, you know, that's the thing is, you know, when you look at all this from a biblical perspective and from a gospel perspective, I mean, this is classic temptation. Trump has led them to an exceeding high mountain, showed them all the kingdoms of the earth, and said, all this I will give you if you will bow down and worship me. And a bunch of these guys are falling for it.
But not all. And maybe
not all. No.
Probably not a majority. which is really interesting. That's what gives the story its drama and its pathos, is that there are good accurate reports that something like 65% of registered Republicans look on him with a strong disfavor.
Right.
He's strongly unappealing to a majority of Republicans.
But yet, the irony, of course,
he's going to be the nominee anyway.
Here's the great irony. They look on him with tremendous disfavor, but their own leaders, that is to say, the other leaders in the field, Cruz and the other guys, have already said, if he's the nominee, we will support him.
Well, I think what's going on there is that's what they're trying to do is save their political careers. They don't know which way the wind is blowing.
Right.
Regarding the party bosses.
Yeah, that's how politics goes. But the thing
is party bosses are trying to decide whether to do something to try to contest it at the convention or whether to run a third party candidate.
Well, we're almost up against a break now, but when we come back, I want to quote from the prophet John Wayne. And make one final point, and then we'll continue this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we're here today with Rod Bennett. We're yakking about the craziness of our politics. We'll be back right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Rod Bennett. By the way, if you want to join the conversation, tell me off, you know, or to tell Rod Bennett how awesome he is, which I agree with, then give us a call at 1-573-4BREAD-4, 1-573-4BREAD-4. And you can also, by the way, you can also text us at Breadbox Media. So give us some feedback. I was going to mention when I'm talking about the dilemma that's facing the Republican Party with the incredible ascendancy of this fascist demagogue, Donald Trump, Donald J. Trump by name. The question that really confronts the party, there's a whole movement now. It's even got a hashtag, so that makes it super official. The Never Trump movement, and these are conservatives. These are principled conservatives who are saying, just no. I will never support this guy, and I'm with them all the way. I hope that they carry through on that. The concern for me is that their own leadership is against them. So the people that they do support, so Ted Cruz, for example, who's basically the main competitor left, John Kasich is still there, he's bringing up the rear, have already said, well, if Trump is the nominee, I'm going to support him. So they're going to, all the Never Trump people are going to be hearing from their own leaderships, okay, you got to get on board because nothing is more important than, you know, this is the most important election of our lifetime, like we're always told. And we have to support him because we have to support him because we have to support him. And that does not speak to me of principled conservatism. What that speaks to me of is total expedience. Now, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. In 1960, when Kennedy was elected, John Wayne, somebody asked John Wayne, you know, what he thought about Kennedy's election. And he said, I didn't vote for him, but he's my president, and I hope he does a good job. Like the John Wayne impression, pretty good, huh?
Not too bad.
Not too bad. So, you know, I mean, that's the answer of a patriot, right? This is somebody who says, look, I mean, I pledge allegiance to the United States. The president of the United States is the president of the United States. And so I'm going to support him because he's the president. Okay, now compare and contrast that with the response of the GOP for the last 8 years to everything that Obama has ever done, including breathe and cough. It's, I mean, Rush Limbaugh's response to him 8 years ago was, I hope he fails.
Yeah, I remember this.
And that, see, that.
Well, keep in mind, this is after 8 years of the Democrats cursing George W. Bush's every step.
Yeah, also. Yeah, I mean, sure, but.
This phenomenon is. A democracy, in its decay. You know?
Sure, right. But here's my point. You know, say what you will about Limbaugh's, you know, attitude toward Obama. I hope he fails. You know, that really is what dedicated, you call it principled, if you want to call it that. I wouldn't really call it that. I'd just call it dogmatic. But that is somebody who really is, and the GOP for the last 8 years have acted like people who were just bound and determined never, ever, ever to make common cause with Obama on anything. Now, compare that with, I oppose Trump, oh, but I'll totally support him if he's the nominee. This is clearly a party that, at the end of the day, is reconcilable. With the kind of fascist.
This remains to be seen, Mark. I tell you what, I'm going to argue with you a little bit here.
Okay.
I think you may be right, but here's the choice that they're making right now, okay? The party bosses, none of which are the guys we're looking at on TV. These right. are the guys that run the party behind the scenes.
Right.
These are the guys that the candidates hoped to work for.
Mm-hmm.
This is a job audition for those guys.
Yeah, right.
What they're trying to do is they're trying to decide which would do the party less damage, to turn it over to Trump for a while and reconcile ourselves to this, jump on the bandwagon, join with Sauron, you know.
Yes.
In because it's the wave of the future, and this is the way history is going.
Well, yeah, as Ben Carson said, I didn't want to endorse him, but he offered me a job, so.
Well, there you go.
Principled conservatism. Yeah.
But I don't think that's what's going to happen.
Okay.
Their other choices are to try. Mitt Romney, who was sent out by the party bosses to give that little speech he gave,
right.
That represents where these guys really are.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. The people that are called the Republican establishment these days, that is the old Republicans who've been Republican since Alexander Hamilton, even though it had a different name for a while. That's the party of old money and wealth and industrial finance capitalism in the United States that thinks that the best way to make America safe is to let the rich rule it and run it, because they're the people whose money you'll need in the case of an invasion and all the rest of it. There's an argument right. to be made for their point of view. Mm-hmm. But they've been running this party for 230 years now. And when Mitt Romney came out and gave his anti-Trump speech, that's those people talking.
Sure.
They don't want Trump. They hate him, and they are right. unwilling to turn their party over to him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these bosses have been willing to make an alliance with the Barry Goldwater wing, mm-hmm. in other words, what nowadays is what we would call the hardcore conservative wing. But what we're only finding out now in the Trump era is they also made an alliance with the know-nothing wing of the party.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, know-nothing is not an insult, even though it applies.
Oh, it's an insult.
There actually was a know-nothing party in America just before the Civil War. They got their name because a lot of their meetings were secret. So if you asked them what their platform was or whatever, they were instructed to say, I know nothing.
Right.
So that's how they got their name. But the know-nothing party, though, but in actuality, what they stand for is nativism, the idea that all of these foreigners are ruining our country.
Right.
in the 1840s and 50s, the foreigners were Chinese and Irish and Italians, non-Northern Protestant Europeans.
Right.
Okay. After the Civil War, they made common cause with the Democratic Party, and because the people that they were worried about was the power of the newly freed black man.
Right.
The thing has gone through a long history, but know-nothing-ism has always been a force in the United States ever since the United States ceased to be all white and all English.
Right. For the most part. Right away.
Right. So what the principled conservative who is shocked and is looking around right now, blinking, wondering what the heck is going on, that person is realizing that though he didn't realize it, he was making common cause with know-nothings. There were know-nothings in his party who were willing to talk against abortion and willing to talk about the other things that the social conservative cares about. But when the rubber hits the road and Donald Trump says he wants to make Mexico pay for a wall, they start jumping up and down and saying, I don't care if he does abortions in the White House now.
Right.
And these principled conservatives are looking around and saying, oh, my God.
Yeah.
We really do have a fascist wing in our party.
Yes, we do.
And,
yes, and a racist one.
And they didn't really realize it.
I think a lot of people are. Yeah, I think that is true. I mean, you know, I've always considered myself a conservative, and frankly, I didn't take seriously, the arguments that racism and frankly misogyny have a real, real purchase on significant sections. I mean, what 40% now of the GOP loves this guy. And the more racist and the more misogynist and the more violent he becomes, the more they love this guy. And that has been a huge education for me.
Right. And the quicker, the quicker they could throw off pro-life and all that poll.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff, talk about the Constitution. They never really cared about all that anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, see, I'm astonished to see this stuff going on. You know, and it's been a very chastening experience for me, of course, because I got lefty friends who are going, you know, we've been trying to warn you about this for a good long while.
Here's how you'll know. Here's how you know whether I'm right or not. That when Carson and Cruz and all the others are saying that they'll vote, support the nominee, whoever he is, what they're saying is, I'll wait to see what the party bosses decide to do.
Well, we'll see. I mean, they've already, you know, the thing is Christie and Carson have already endorsed the guy.
I think what they're saying is it's a major problem if they say they won't support the party. What they're doing is they're expressing faith that the party will have a better answer than Trump eventually. And I believe that inside the interior councils of the party, that's what is going on. I do not believe the establishment is going to accept Trump. And when I say the establishment, I don't put it against the conservatives. I put it against Trumpism.
Well, we'll see. Hey, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, Rod. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we will be back tomorrow with Christine Franklin. Until then, have a lovely evening. Bye-bye.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.